WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
2 years ago, environmental writer Daniel Glick was enjoying professional success but struggling with calamities in his personal life. His wife had left their 15-year marriage for a lesbian relationship, making Glick a single father of two children, age 9 and 13. A year after that, Glick's older brother died of male breast cancer. Glick, who had long found personal renewal in travel, decided to take his children on a 5-month around-the-world tour, focusing on endangered species and disappearing natural wonders. The journey is recorded in Glick's new book, Monkey Dancing, A Father, Two Kids, and a Journey to the Ends of the Earth. Daniel Glick worked for Newsweek for 12 years and has written for a variety of publications, including Rolling Stone and the New York Times Magazine. Let's start with a reading from Monkey Dancing.
In the middle of the night, after my daughter Zoe woke me for the third time because she was afraid of the snakes, I wondered, not for the first time, whether this trip had really been such an inspired idea. Earlier, Zoe had been complaining about leeches, and before that, mosquitoes, and it dawned on me that unless you were raised in the rainforest, accustomed to strangler figs and spiders the size of gerbils, Borneo was a pretty forbidding environment. For a 9-year-old girl reared in suburban Colorado, this place looked downright menacing. My 13-year-old son Kolya, also awakened by his sister, didn't help things when he authoritatively informed Zoe that, since she was the smallest mammal among us, any predator would obviously eat her first.
Welcome to Fresh Air.
Thanks for having me.
Daniel Glick, you're an environmental writer, and you organized a lot of this trip around a focus on several endangered species, the Great Barrier Reef in Australia, orangutans in Borneo, rhinos in Vietnam, tigers in Asia. And you use your journalistic contacts to get some pretty sophisticated looks behind the scenes of conservation efforts. And I'm wondering, were any of these stories particularly compelling to the kids? Did they catch on? Did they appreciate what they were getting?
Well, something happened fortuitously early in the trip that really set the tone. We were in Queensland in Australia, which is where the rainforest meets the reef, the Great Barrier Reef and the Daintree rainforest. And I had been telling the kids about this particular animal called a cassowary, which is cousin to the emu and ostrich, the world's, second largest bird, flightless. And endangered because of land clearing, because of all kinds of human activity that's constricting its habitat. And I was giving the kids one of my little eco lectures when they were rolling their eyes and saying, "Oh, Dad, come on, please, we don't need all this." And all of a sudden, we saw a cassowary by the side of the road we were driving on, and we got out of the car and we watched it disappear into the forest. From there, we went to an ice cream parlor where they had served all these macadamia nut and papaya and coconut and these wonderful exotic fruit ice creams. And the woman who had been serving us, we had gone back there 3 or 4 days in a row, said that we were very, very lucky to see a cassowary because even the locals didn't get to see them very often. And that the cassowary had some interesting habits given our circumstances, that the females lay the eggs and then they split. And it's the male cassowaries who hatch the eggs and who take the chicks and live with them for a year and teach them everything they need to know. And even the kids understood that this was almost a magical metaphor for what had happened to us. And at one point, Kolya said to me, "Pop, that's what you meant. You wanted to take us to see some of these things before they're gone, didn't you?" And I said, "You got it. That's what we're out to do here. I thought of this as a Before They're Gone tour. One of the Before They're Gones was to take the kids to see these places of great ecological wonder before they disappeared. The second was to spend some time with my kids and really get to know them and have them get to know me before they were gone, before they fledged my single father's nest. And the third Before They're Gone was the big one, mortality. My brother died at 48. He was one of the healthiest human beings I knew. He was an athlete. He was a doctor. He took really very, very good care of himself. And he died so early and so young that I figured what we all know is that we can't guarantee how long we're going to be around. And I wanted to really live life on my own terms before it was gone, my own life was gone.
You say late in the book, in the epilogue, that grief and loss, you've come to believe, provide the glue that binds humanity together. What did you mean by that?
That thought occurred to me after I had had a conversation with a Nepali man who ran a shop where I was, and he had told me that he had gotten divorced, which was unusual not only because divorce is relatively rare in Nepal, but also because sharing that information with a stranger was fairly uncharacteristic. And he went on to tell me that his father had passed away from cancer the year before. And as I write in the book, fearful of matching him tragic revelation for tragic revelation, I shared with him my story. And we sat there together, and there was something that bound us together. And subsequent to writing the book, the letters I've gotten from people who can share one element or another or several of the losses that I've gone through, the death of a loved one to a disease or an accident or anything, or a divorce that shatters a family. It is grief and loss that is the most universal truth that we have as a species.
Were you together 24 hours a day? Did you and the kids have any time apart?
Very little. Occasionally we did. We met up with some friends along the way a couple times. Like I said, I had some friends in Phnom Penh. But for the most part, as the kids put it, we were together 24/7.
And how did you handle that? I mean, weren't there times that you wanted to just go away and be with adults?
There were. There was one place we were in Australia where, although we had rented a camper van, at one point I checked us into a kind of a traveler's haunt, and I got them into a little cabana, and I said, "I'm going to the bar." And they said, "We want to come." And I said, "No, I'm going alone." And after a little tug of war, I just left them in this room and went and had a couple beers and came back, and they were snoring.
And as I recall, you discovered that sort of the local young adults kind of weren't that interested in a guy like you traveling with kids by himself.
Well, it's funny. I joked that, you know, being a single dad hardly makes you a babe magnet. And I was traveling with these two kids, and I was a single man. And I had asked a friend of mine who was divorced what was the youngest woman he had gone out with, and he said he had some fail-safe theorem that you could have your age and then add 7. And I realized that by that theorem, I could go out with a 29-year-old woman, and there wasn't anybody even that old in the place. And so this was not a dating scene on this trip, and I quickly abandoned it. But that didn't allow me to completely abandon my fantasy life.
Well, Daniel Glick, thanks so much for talking with us.
And my great pleasure. Thank you.
Writer Daniel Glick. His book about the journey he took with his children is called Monkey Dancing.